pudding people, to another episode of Everybody Loves Pudding. We are your hosts, Richard Geiger and Ken Seymour, pondering the big questions.
We are. Is a Creed song something that you think about when we talk about this show?
Only if you say its name over and over and over again.
Over and over. Yes, correct.
We are, of course, going to be discussing the third season of What If? This is the show that keeps on plugging on for Disney Online. None of the other shows have gone three seasons.
Well, I think the first one was pretty solid, right?
Yeah.
And then the second one was pretty decent, too.
Right.
And I think, to an extent, it's probably much easier for them to create these episodes. A lot of the voice acting were people reprising their roles from the live action sequences. So that part is awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
To be able to get those people into the studio for a day. I imagine it's a day. Maybe they just
half an hour
dialogue for a couple hours at best. And make six figures for doing it. But, you know.
I don't know. The voice actors traditionally don't get paid a ton. I have a funny feeling that while they might earn pretty hefty salaries and other things, I doubt they got paid a lot for this.
Wonder if it's part of their contract. So they had to do it, you know. Anyway, probably easier for them to construct because they can work around time schedules for people who have other projects. They can make up their own stories, good, bad, or otherwise, and just loosely tie them into things that they've done in the past. And I have a feeling that this might be the last of the series is for What If.
From what I understand, this is the last season, yeah. So in our dissection and over-analysis of this season, as always, we'll do a little spoiler-free beginning and then go into the meat of it. Unlike many of our movie reviews, we will not be using our 100-point scale that is tried, true, tested, and completely scientific. And instead, we will be going completely on our opinion, which is also tried, true, and completely scientific.
And matters in an absolute fashion.
Yes. All right. So in general, is this a show that's one of those things that's a must watch that you should see? Is it something that is like, you know, you get around to it, something that you put on while you're folding your clothes, or is it something that you avoid altogether?
I think if you have that Marvel itch, meaning you just like the content in general, good, bad, or otherwise, that this is something that you will definitely watch. This is more, when they were released, it was day after day after day, so it was easy to consume. Most people had time away from school or work, so they could sit and consume it. Plus, they were like 20, 25 minutes long, so it's easy to, you know, eat a bowl of cereal and watch the show. So I think from that standpoint, it's definitely worth watching. But is it like appointment television? I don't know about that.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. It's definitely something that I love because, you know, being a comic book fan, I want to see what they do with one of the comic series that I always enjoyed. And the track record has so far shown that it's like they'll deliver something decent, but it traditionally is not going to be like groundbreaking in any way. It's not going to knock me on my butt and amaze me in any way, shape, or form when I see any of this stuff. But it will be really entertaining, well, or at least somewhat entertaining, somewhere between somewhat and really entertaining when I watch the episode. So, you know, I'd say it's worth a watch for sure, especially if you got kids of a variety of ages, as some of these episodes are more adult than others. Most of them are pretty accessible for all ages. They try and keep it in a pretty good range.
Yeah, I think so. I think the premise of the what if, what would you call it, what if-ery? I think it's stretched a bit this season. Right, where
not really, not when you compare it to the comics.
Was it more like I always kind of figured in the What If series of things, you know, you have the standard sequence of events, and in that standard sequence of events, one thing got changed, which led to a whole nother sequence of events. Isn't that
That is often the basis, but not always. Sometimes they go really weird directions, or they give you multiple choices. One of my favorite issues was, what if the Fantastic Four all had the same power? It was actually four stories, depending upon which power they got.
Interesting. So that'd be fun.
Right. And that was one. That was a really great issue. But sometimes it is literally a whole different thing. And sometimes they did actually have plots that stretched across the comics because there would be something wonky going on with the Watchers or something behind the scenes. And they had some really fun things that involved bringing in champions to kind of help thwart things. But they had some cooler options back then, like the there was a what if that Wolverine became Lord of the Vampires. And so you had the Lord of the Vampires Wolverine as one of the key players in one of these things out there. There's a bunch of good stuff. But yeah, so it often branched from a single choice, but not always. Sometimes they just did a completely different environment. And technically speaking, these still all cruxed off of one single big change. Whether it's a single sequence or just a single concept of reality that was different. So like the Western episode that they did, you know, what if that happened during that time frame? Yeah, they've done stuff like that in the What If comics before, where it's not one action that was different, but things happened at a different time. Yeah, that happens all the time.
Okay. So, That was only my only kind of like over encompassing thought for this season, as if it strayed too far away from what they had originally been doing. But
nah, not really. Now a lot, it felt to me, and this may just be me, but it felt to me like a lot of the choices they made, it's like, well, this is going to be the last season. Let's try some ideas that we can really try something different, and maybe it will just connect and be a home run. It's like they really gave it the swing. Now, I didn't say they connected as well as they thought that they would connect, but it felt like they were really trying to do something different and fun.
Well, you kind of showed that in the first episode.
Right, exactly. Right? You know, bringing up the basically the Voltron Avengers.
Yep. And you know, that was an interesting concept, but still, that even that on its own was surrounded by a world of, you know,
Godzilla
destruction, devastation in a sense.
Yeah. So that one was maybe the biggest miss of the season for me, and it was partly because it was trying to kind of bring two concepts into the Marvel that aren't generally in the Marvel, one being Mecha and the other being big monsters like Godzilla, of which I do not give two bits about either one of those. I've never been a fan of either of them. So to try and force that kind of into the Marvel thing, I couldn't have cared less. It's like, oh, this is a thing. Well, we'll get through it in half an hour. Next week's will be better.
Yeah, if they made like a rated R mech warrior movie, I'd be down for that. That I would enjoy that.
That could be fun.
In of all the Godzilla things that have happened in the last 10 years, there's been a lot of movies. There was one of the first ones a while ago with Aaron Taylor Johnson. That one was actually, I thought, pretty good, but the other ones have just kind of devolved into eh.
Well, I know nothing can really compare to your favorite with Matthew Broderick in it, but
I mean, it did have a cool song, but wait, who did that song?
Green Day.
No, it was the
Brain Stew was the big one from the Godzilla soundtrack.
No, it was the Led Zeppelin ditty.
Oh, I didn't consider that one to be the big one from that soundtrack. That was one of the weakest. I guess people liked it at the time, and now it's funny when you think about it in retrospect. Yeah. But
they performed it on SNL.
I'm telling you though, that Brain Stew song, I liked it on Dookie, but actually mixing in the yell of Godzilla into the track made the song better.
Better, yeah.
It's just how is that even possible? It doesn't make any sense, but it was. Yeah, okay, yeah, this is definitely better.
Yeah, kids, that's when Green Day wasn't too bad.
Oh, to get into the discussion, did Green Day sell out? When did they sell out? I'm not going to get into that discussion. That's a no-win discussion right there.
Yeah, that's just down a rabbit hole we don't need to go into
now. No, that's not this episode. I'm just going to go with, I like Green Day and their music is good. That first episode, on top of the fact that it didn't make any sense to me that they needed Mecha to fight, it's like, first of all, where's Thor? Thor can take out the good chunk of most of them without much problem. But no, his Mecha was downed and destroyed. Why would Thor need a Mecha?
Because that's the theme.
I understand, but no. No. Come on, man.
Maybe he was weaker in this.
Yeah. You got to give me something, but whatever. The episode was meh, very meh for me, but it's like, let's see what can happen. And I think that by episode two, it's like, oh, this one's actually pretty good. The what if Agatha went to Hollywood? Now, have you seen Agatha All Along yet?
Yep, I've seen the whole thing.
Yeah, no, I was just playing. We already reviewed it.
What about Eternals?
Oh, yeah, we saw that too. I seem to remember that we did not have a lot of positive things to say about it, but we didn't really kind of kill it either.
No, I actually enjoyed the concept of it.
Right.
I've probably watched that movie three times, maybe.
Yeah.
Four times?
I think I saw it one and a half times, and that was good.
Yeah, it had the potential to be a lot cooler than what it was. I just like I said, the concept of it and them being around for, eons through, iterations of the world as it kind of progressed and grew, and then how they finally have gone back to that, right? Because
right.
We all thought all along that celestial body coming out of the ocean would be mentioned in the last 10 years or, 5 years, but really hasn't been.
Well, just wait. It's going to be mentioned in the next film.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
But the thing that gets me, though, is, first of all, okay, before I go any farther, the Eternals is just an example of the problems you're going to have in an expanding shared universe where you start trying to bring up things that came from a long, long time ago, because then it just conflicts with all the other stories that you've told. It's like, oh, so you're telling me that the Eternals would have done nothing when Thanos landed and started destroying everything. So it's just kind of one of those things where you just go, hold on, wait a second, something's off here. We got basically Superman in one of the characters, and he's going to do nothing. Sure. Okay. But yeah, anyway.
Well, hey, it was their position to be hands off.
Right.
They explained that in the movie.
Yeah.
So,
No, try again. They took what I felt was the best part of the Eternals to put into this film.
Correct.
And, I just love that actor so much. He's so funny all the time. and just the silliness of the character. And they actually were able to kind of rub off some of the silliness with the Agatha character on top of it. And the two of them together, the dance scene is just, it's so much fun.
Yeah, I thought this one was pretty solid. And, you know, the concept of Howard Stark being a big time movie person. I could see that. Yep. And then all the flair and pizzazz and then at the end, you know, as they're going through some of the sequences, he's like, yeah, I know. He knew that she was just, you know, like making up special effects. Like, he knew, like, of course we know.
Yeah, he's one of the smartest people on the planet.
Yeah. So it was something that I guess if you think about it, when you were watching Agatha all along, did you really think like, oh, well, this will pair well with the Eternals in a dance sequence? So I did appreciate bringing two kind of just separate entities together into right. one and making it make sense too.
And that's what I was talking about with those big swings. Like the first one, who would ever think Mecha and Godzilla stuff in a Marvel thing? They took a big swing and I felt that one was a foul ball, but it was worth the big swing. And then they go, okay, what if we do a Bollywood musical between those two things that don't go together? And okay, a solid double play.
Yeah.
It's just really a lot of fun.
Yep. Very good.
It's like, okay, so maybe they're getting their legs under them. They go into the third episode, Red Guardian stopping the Winter Soldier. And I'm kind of torn on this one. There are elements of it that I really, really enjoyed. But some of it just felt like it fell flat.
Yeah. It definitely had the goofiness of the Red Guardian character. And I don't know if that was delivered quite so much in the Black Widow movie, because I just felt that movie wasn't very good, and I've only watched it the one time. I've never gone back and watched it again.
No, he delivered some bombastic kind of craziness like that in that film.
Sure. I'm just wondering if they presented him as the character that had devolved into that, or if he was just like that the whole time. You know,
I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's hard to say. Hard to know. But yeah, the Black Widow film was not, the stuff from that was not the strongest stuff. And then they mixed it with the Goliath character while he was still in S.H.I.E.L.D. It's like, all right, sort of, okay.
Sort of. Because I thought that was just like an experimental.
Like he was never a field agent.
Correct. That's how I got that presentation from Ant-Man, right? Where it was just, people would have known more about that character, I would suppose, but
maybe. And the chase scenes were, maybe that's the part that really got me, is it was just kind of uninspired chase scenes. The interplay between Winter Soldier and Red Guardian was good. It needed some more time to develop so that the payoff would actually mean something at the end.
Yeah.
But I got where they were going with it, and the idea was solid. And I have to say, changing the little Avengers bit at the very end to include the Red Guardian, that was funny. That was almost worth the whole episode by itself, because he's so excited to be there.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Oh, that made me... Go ahead.
I like how they got David Harbour back for the voice, right? Too, you know.
He does it with such enthusiasm and gusto. It's like, man, that's an actor that I would love to meet, because he seems to have so much fun with his characters that he does.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, again, you know, that one was like, you know, okay, swung hard, got a single. All right, fine. Not bad. Not bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then episode 4 hit. And that's where I go, oh, finally, it's time. Let's go. Let's bring in some other characters that don't get the time to shine. And then on top of it, just come up with a storyline that is so out there. It's like this is what if was made for. And that's the What If Howard the Duck Got Hitched episode. I was so happy with that one.
Well, I think that the Howard the Duck character is so cheesy and silly that it deserves and needs more time, right?
Yeah.
You know, James Gunn gave him a little love sprinkled in there. And then the Darcy character, I think, was always, maybe I'm underestimating or overestimating. I always thought she was a fan favorite.
She is, absolutely.
So it was nice, once again, to bring, like you said, those two characters that maybe deserve a little bit more face time and screen time in general, and throw them a bone with absurdity, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then build on the absurdity.
Just seeing that they're being chased by the Grandmaster and by
Ravagers.
Oh, the Ravagers, sure, but also by the villains from the first Doctor Strange film.
Caecilius.
Caecilius. I about called him Mycelius. It's like, no, that's a biological term. But just basically everybody wants a piece of this egg. That was one of the best entrants. Like, you know, it's like, oh, they're going to have the baby. It's like, it's an egg. Oh, yeah, so it's not done yet. It's just such a swerve. Nobody knows what's going on. It's like, yeah, I don't know what's going on here. Let's just roll with it.
And then it kind of, like, everybody got involved in it. Right?
Yeah.
They took it to the snow world, right?
Right.
With the frost giant and Loki, right? And then not Thor. Thanos did end up showing up too, even in there.
Just on accident.
Yeah.
As he is for an egg. Oh, yeah, that. It's a powerful egg.
Mm-hmm. So that one had the goofiness that I think was just the right amount of goofiness.
Oh, yeah.
So that one was good.
Yeah, that was a home run for me. Next one, it's all right, so we've got the home run. Now they got their stride. Let's do it and bring in the least interesting character in Marvel to be the lead in a timeline that is the worst ending to the least popular film. It's like, come on. What are you doing? Just fine, whatever. So what if the emergence destroyed the Earth? And it's like, all right. I liked it, the fact that they got they made the villain Mysterio. That's kind of fun.
Yeah, that was kind of out of left field. Like, he survived.
Right. It seems unlikely at best. But there were so many problems with that episode, beyond the fact that Riri Williams is the lead character. She is not fleshed out enough yet to be a lead character. She was in one film for a smattering of time. No.
With an awful suit.
Yeah. That looked like stupid bubblegum. I'm still mad about that. And then on top of it, it's like, well, I rule over what's left of the planet. You mean the planet where everyone should be dead and they never even address how people are living through this?
Well, that's what I was wondering. And granted, I know this is silliness, right? That's the whole point.
It's sci-fi. It's fantasy.
But these fractured planet fragments, how do they have gravity? How do they have oxygen?
Right.
And the whole time I'm like, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Distracting me from
everything
what I'm
else.
Watching. And It's fantasy. I know that, but still, it's fantasy that's based on a realistic Marvel world, right? So
right.
There are rules that are already in place for this Marvel world, and you're just basically disregarding all of them.
You've got to at least put in like a line of dialogue or two that gives some, at least a hand wavy something to address it. And I would, that would be enough to get me past that. But just not addressing it at all, it's like, yeah, here's a couple pieces. No. No, that's just not right. Taking a character like the Vision, and it's the White Vision, so this is the one that's post WandaVision,
mm-hmm.
and he's mindless. Really?
Well, you get reprogrammed.
Yeah.
By Mysterio.
Yeah, it still seems like we're missing a piece here. That it doesn't seem quite right. But okay, I got mostly past that, so I can deal with that. I liked the team that was helping Riri, having those characters together. It's like, okay, that's a pretty cool grouping of people. I really like what they did with Valkyrie in the films. And I love Wong. I mean, he almost steals a lot of the Doctor Strange stuff away from Cumberbatch.
Yes, he needs more screen time.
Yeah, he definitely does. So that, you know, that whole group, okay, sure. Yeah, I can get behind that. But still, it's like you can't have Riri be the center yet. Yet. It could have meant something if you had actually developed her character at all in the MCU. But unless you're a comic book fan, you've gotten nothing up until those. There's no reason to care about this character. So it's just, that was just a big mistake. That was a strike. That was a swing and a miss.
Yeah, and then of course you still had the Sharon Carter,
right,
character, doing the underhanded sales or
right.
like behind the scenes black market stuff. Still had access to a
seemed odd.
What was it again? A toaster oven?
Easy bake oven.
Easy bake oven. Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. It's like, sure, whatever.
Okay.
And then they decide to go out of left field and do one of those what ifs where the entire environment's different. 1872. They put Hawkeye and Shang-Chi together, which I thought was an interesting combo. It's like, oh. Yeah, that could work. That's like the old Kung Fu television show feel. Two people going through the old West, but they have the fighting skills. It's like, oh yeah, that could be fun. So I thought they were on to something with that one.
Yeah, I like the idea, and of course it's the Kate Bishop Hawkeye,
right?
And actually, Haley Steinfeld got her big start in a Western.
Yeah.
What was that one again? Had Rooster Cockburn in it. It was a remake of a movie. Anyway, that was her first big break. Was a Western. Yeah, I liked the concept of it. I think we were talking before as it built up to, you know, finding the bad guy, and there was no surprise
right.
at the end. I didn't think that
the twist
bad guy,
that wasn't.
Yes, I was like, oh, that's pretty obvious. But like you said, the hood, the cloak, the hood,
right,
got no
explanation,
no explanation, no fleshing out, no anything. So one, is that a real item in the Marvel Comics universe?
Yeah, yeah, it's super important. It's part of one of the major villains that they've got is this crime kingpin. He even got the Infinity Gauntlet together at one point. That's kind of the level of importance that follows the Red Hood. And I admire them for introducing it, but giving zero explanation on it. The most they got is they implied that the Hood ate away at the way the person thought, or maybe sort of controlled them. but that was it, just a hint. And that is not enough for that item. It's got some connections to a fairly powerful mystical entity. We won't go into too deep of what that means, because they may change it by the time they bring it actually into the MCU and it'd be something completely different. Who knows? But that was a little disappointing, but you know, still it was okay. It was all right.
Yeah, and that the Shang-Chi character with his skill set, of course, would have been well off in that time frame.
Yep.
The Hawkeye character with, you know, the accuracy and the manipulating of weapons in some form or fashion would have fit in well in that time frame.
Yep.
So they had the right mix and they had the right kind of camaraderie, and they still told a story about briefly about why they were out and about doing their thing. The timeline was weird. So it seemed like it was established that you rang the bell 10 times and they would come, and that was a thing that was known throughout the territory. But it seemed like
Does he have that ability?
that just the bad guys just came into power, you know?
Yeah. It's
weird.
We got some Stark tech and such. So we know technology exists. So this is the Old West, but it's like Wild Wild West, Old West. So it's just kind of weird in that respect. I liked the fight scenes a lot in this one. I thought they did a really good job with that. We got some Walton Goggins to go with it. That was nice.
I'm wondering, obviously, that he played that character one time.
Right.
In the second one, right?
The second Ant-Man and the Wasp, yeah.
And he's hot right now.
Yes, he is.
So I'm wondering if that was just a tiny excuse to, you know,
get him in here.
Get him in. Hopefully we'll see more of him in other projects too, but
yeah, it had to have been. That's the only thing I can think of when I saw him. But you know, solid single, maybe even squeezing into a double if you're nice about it on that one. But you know, in episode 5 and 6, we get a little bit of the Watcher interfering and the other Watchers seeing that, not liking it very much. Even though all he did was say, "Try Riri," in one, and then just a little blew the one guy off the train, and the other's like, "All right, that's fine."
Yeah, just enough.
Just
but,
enough.
That's not what they're supposed to do.
That's right. And so the next two episodes are all about basically that. You know, he gets confronted at the end of episode 6 and sends shards flying from the interdimensional whatever, from the fifth dimension into the real world. And well, one of the real worlds, as Haley Atwell voices the Captain Carter character and sees the shards fall right next to her and all that sort of stuff. Okay, so, all right. These episodes I thought were both pretty fun, but the big but is, okay, you've got this group that they're calling the Exiles, which in spirit is fine. That's basically what the Exiles group is, and I'm fine with that. And they got some really interesting characters to put in it. I actually think it's a really interesting grouping between the Kahori character that they created just for What If, and you got Captain Carter as the leader, and Storm is Thor, and you got the original voice actor to do Storm for that, which is awesome.
Very cool.
And then you've got the grown-up Howard the Duck's kid, and it's like, okay, yeah, this is kind of a really interesting little grouping that we get no backstory of or history with. It just kind of appears.
Yeah, and we know the Agent Carter, because we're assuming it's the Agent Carter, because she kind of accumulated the group. And we got the backstory for Kahori
Right.
So we know her backstory. She appeared in multiple episodes last season to kind of help things along. So those two were fine.
We get only just the beginning for Howard the Duck's kid, and then it jumps till she's 20.
And is, you know, not fully fleshed out to an extent, but, like, knows the powers, can use them. Maybe not, doesn't know exactly how powerful she actually is, but can still, you know, has practice using her powers.
So I do like that when she learns her voice, she's got to know little speech impediment today to go through it. It's like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And then I think there has been a Storm Thor.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it makes sense.
Multiple times. But you're given no history. So comic book fans go, okay, yeah. But anybody else that's watching it goes, what, the who now? They don't know anything about this.
Yeah, and if you've been paying attention to only MCU stuff, do you even know who Storm is?
Right.
Like, you might not be familiar with that X-Men character.
I mean, if you watch the X-Men 97 thing that they put on there, you would be. But generally speaking, I don't think new people watch that. Just all the fans of the original show went on and watched it.
And it's amazing.
It is. It is so good. So you got the normal thing. We've got to find a way to do our thing to help our friend and get him thing. And blah, 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 blah. Very predictable plot. The one issue that I had a bigger issue at first, but it's kind of, I kind of think it's less of an issue now as I started thinking about it, is one of the things about the comics, they don't really tell you where the Watcher's power comes from. They tell you about their history. They tell you about the oath that they take. They tell you about what happens with that sorts of things, but they leave out their power completely. And the fact that it's kind of directly addressed in this, that it's shared from one Watcher to another, I thought that was interesting, although it kind of undercuts that it's their race that did it originally, not, they were the ones that had it. This isn't something you can share outside of that. Seemed a little odd, but it's like, okay, nothing said that they couldn't do that. Why not? Maybe they found something that they did share. It leaves something tantalizing to explore there that they will never touch.
Yeah, because it showed the younger version.
Right.
Kind of getting imbued with the power. The other Watchers were, you know, quite proficient in their battle arts.
Right.
Who knew?
With their big old baby heads doing headbutts.
Yeah. They go through rigorous training to, you know, beat up all the people that they're not going to interfere with.
Yeah.
Whatever, man.
Yeah, and generally when you look at their status in the cosmic hierarchy in the comics, they're not that powerful. I mean, they can kind of show up and do things to a certain extent, but they are overpowered by the Celestials and Galactus and pretty much anybody else with some sort of a cosmic purpose. I mean, they kind of exceed like the god tier characters like Odin and Zeus and things like that. But when it comes to the big, big boys, they are a step below. So not sure where they're going with this. Maybe they're redefining what they are and who they mean. That could be interesting if they would pursue it. Since this is the last season of the show, will they do it in the comics maybe? Who knows?
Well, what would the Watcher's place be in the live action? Because what they're really working on, right, is just condensing everything to be one existence, right?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, I think they're in the movies that they're going through in the Avengers movies, they're really working that they're resetting everything effectively and just eventually going to have it be one universe that has Avengers people in it and X-Men people in it and all that stuff. The Watchers look over multiple iterations, right?
Right.
So the Watchers wouldn't be something that are magically going to show up in the live action, I wouldn't imagine.
They have. A couple times. It's just very briefly, very quickly. I think that they will. And this reset is building the Secret Wars, which it's not condensing down to a single universe, at least not permanently. It is combining everything. But there will still be a multiverse because there was after the Secret Wars event in the comics, and there will be after the movie happens too, because they're going to leave themselves out. So they always do.
Yeah, so if they have another story to tell, they can just say, oh, it's in this multiverse.
Exactly.
Place. It's in Earth 792843494.
Yeah, so both of these episodes, the way it ended, it's like, you know, solid doubles again. So on average, this whole season to me is like a solid double, you know?
Yeah, yep. Okay, right, a lot of, yeah, these are good. Couple really goods, couple, that average out.
It's kind of funny. My favorite episode almost ranks lowest in the IMDb scoring.
Yeah, I was looking at those ratings too. None of them hit over a six.
6.8 is the highest.
There's no sevens, right? Yeah. So it appears to me that people are thinking in general the same thing, that these are just, you know,
they're okay.
But I don't think the previous seasons, they really had gigantic ratings either. So in terms of eights and nines or anything like that.
Season 1, episode 8, 8.9.
Nice.
So, you know, it kind of depends. I think part of it is they're getting kind of tired of it too.
Yeah. I think there was a lot of new in the first season, right? It was different. They told cool stories. We had characters that we liked. They had the zombies episode, right, which was fine. So that first season was good, and then the second season was not as good, but it was still good. It was still good. You saw a lot more just sevens in that one. Yeah. And then this one, I just felt overall was more of a stretch. Like, it was more of a stretch in that it just didn't have the same spirit that the first couple did.
Well, I've started thinking about that.
Missing something.
Well, I think about it. The first year of What If was based on all of the better movies. So as the movies have been decreasing in quality, that means the source material for their What Ifs that they're starting with are not as good.
That's true. I mean, we are talking about, you know, some of the like we got Red Guardian in here.
Some of the dregs.
Yeah. The characters were the highlights, right?
Right.
So you pick the highlighted characters. It's just, you know, unfortunately, they're some of the lowest ratings in movies. Yeah, yep. So that makes sense.
Oh, well, what did you think, listeners? Are we right? Was this a series of meh? Or were we way off base? You said, this is the best thing ever, and I'll tell you why. We would love to hear it. Give us like 12 paragraphs somewhere on Facebook or, you know, or on Instagram. You'd take pictures of yourself being really angry about how we were wrong about this episode and post them right up to the feed. We would love it. Any sort of interaction, we love that sort of stuff. We love to hear what you guys think. And next week, we will be doing an interview with actress Amy McKenzie. Very interesting stuff. She's in the new Dexter spinoff in an episode, a few other episodes of interest, some really fun live action theater history. A nice lady. It's a good interview, and I highly advise you to listen.